In white letters on a black screen, Granada and Newmarket Capital Group present a Granada film, David Paradine production. A film by James Dearden with Ewan McGregor and Anna Friel. Rogue Trader in white capitals as blue numbers appear on a video screen. In a dark, crowded nightclub, a group of women dance on the stage. In the crowd, Nick, a handsome, dark-haired young man, is with his friend Steve. They eye an attractive blonde girl chatting to a tall man at the bar.
Look at that! Will you fucking look at that?
The black guy?
Yeah.
It's a shame she looks well spoken for.
Never know your luck though, eh, mate?
Steve pushes through the crowd to the girl, now alone.
Don't do that. Steve.
He unfastens his flies and she looks down.
Hello, love. Got something to show you.
Do you have your mind or what? Fucking little prick. And I mean little.
Nick comes between them.
Hey, you lean asshole.
Oh, calm down, mate. What are you speaking to?
Fuck off or you're dead. I want you out here. Now,
it's really sorry, all right? He's very pissed. He didn't mean any disrespect. This is the last thing on anybody's mind, all right?
Tell him he doesn't put that fucking thing away.
What is
it off of my bed?
Nick leads Steve away to their friends.
He flies like a fucking animal. Just give me a heart attack.
The man smashes Nick across the face with a chair. Holding his bloodied face, he collapses to the floor. His friends peer down anxiously. Morning in the city of London. Traffic streams over Waterloo Bridge. Crisp sunlight on the towering finance houses surrounding the statue of Roland Hill, which overlooks the bank workers streaming through the baroque portals of Barings Bank.
It was thanks to Maggie Thatcher opening up the city of London that yours truly from Watford came to be working for a posh outfit like Barings.
Dark-suited men and a few women march through the vaulted corridors.
You probably heard about me. Barings was the oldest private bank in the world. They financed the Louisiana.
Nick, in suit and tie, sits in the office of his boss, Tony.
They even had the Queen as a customer. I was just a humble clerk, but not for long, I hoped.
Car crash. I hit my head on the back of the seat and broke my nose. Everybody else was all right because they were wearing their seatbelts.
Poor chap. And now, Nick, I know you're keen to get out of the back office and onto the trading floor. But in the meantime, something else.
I think you'll agree that in Nick, Lisa has met her prince. So would you all join me in wishing them well in their new life in Singapore, where Nick is to be general manager of the trading floor, whatever that means. I mean, impress the hell out of me, but... to you, Nick, I'm entrusting the most precious of gifts. I know you're going to look after her and cherish her.
And all those other things. And if you don't, I'll break your bloody legs, right?
They kiss tenderly. Singapore Harbour, concrete and steel skyscrapers tower over hurrying junks.
As a reward for my success in Jakarta, I'd be given Singapore.
Nick and Lisa, in shorts and light tropical clothing, peer over the balcony of their new condominium. A letting agent shows them from one bright clean room to the next. The agent points the way and Nick and Lisa, hugging each other, stroll into the airy room, which they survey with pleasure, smiling at each other, thrilled. They escort the agent to the door, where she offers a card politely with both hands.
Did you anything, call me at my office.
Right, thanks.
Have a nice day.
He lifts Lisa off her feet.
Not bad for a charger from Watford, eh?
Still kissing, they rush back to the bedroom where they eagerly remove their clothing, hugging and caressing each other passionately, until Lisa lies back over the bed, Nick planting passionate kisses on her neck. Ocean Towers, in the heart of the Singapore business district, Nick sits in the office of Simon Jones, the regional manager in Singapore.
Need more than two to help you on the trading floor. A couple more in the back office for settlements. No need to pay top dollar. Get them young.
In a cafe.
And train them up. I'm a bottom line kind of guy, Nick.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's my philosophy. I took him at his word. My team were young. They were hungry. And they didn't have a clue. Futures
contracts. Blank looks from his Singaporean trading team.
A commodity at a specified price at a future date. It's like if I agree to sell you this cup of cappuccino, which I don't yet own, at 45 cents a month from now. If I can buy the cappuccino at, say, 43 cents, I make a profit. If the price goes the other way, I have to pay more and I lose. It's timing. It's buying and selling at the right moment. Sometimes espresso might be the best deal, or salt or pepper.
So, we're running a supermarket up.
The truth of the matter is, we're not buying and selling anything real. It's just numbers. In our case, contracts based on the value of the Nikkei, the Tokyo stock market.
We do this for the bank?
No, we do this outside. For the customers. We are not allowed to trade on behalf of the bank. Be sure you remember that, all right?
Other dealers wear red jackets. All say red is lucky Chinese colour.
Yeah, well, that's the point. We want to stand out. We're a new operation. We need to be noticed.
Maybe bad luck, mate. Different colour.
Harry taps his head to indicate that George is crazy as Nick leads his traders clad in yellow and black striped blazers into the Singapore Exchange. They walk in through the door to be faced by the tumult of waving hands, shouting faces and ritual signalling of open outcry trading. Nick breathes in the atmosphere with relish as he surveys the multicoloured attires of frantic dealmakers. Kim and Bonnie betray their anxiety as Nick leads them forward. Sometime later, in a quiet period, Nick is on the phone to Tokyo from his base on the trading floor.
Fernando, anything happening in Tokyo?
Nothing. How's Simax?
The Singapore Nikkei indicator drops 10 points.
690 and trading small.
600 and thin, too.
580 here, there's a seller who wants to trade inside. Shall I low tick him?
Yeah, flush him out.
Nick signs to George.
Sucker.
How many?
200. Buy them now.
Buy them! Filled!
You paid 580.
Harry and Nick smack hands gleefully in a high five. The trading continues energetically as Nick crams sweets into his mouth.
They were a good bunch and they were keen to learn. It looked like a madhouse with all the traders waving and shouting like bookies at a racetrack. But it all made sense once you got the hang of it. There were some hiccups, of course, but that's normal in any operation, especially a new one like ours.
Nick and Lisa kiss in a colourful street market.
We were picking up the business.
In the back settlement office of Bearings, Bonnie is at the keyboard as Nick enters, tired, tie undone, after a day's trading on the Simex floor.
Initial margin's like a down payment on each futures contract that we trade. Now, we don't have to pay that in full until a contract matures. But in the meantime, the value of each contract may go up or down. So Simex calculate our positions on a daily basis. And the
Nick goes to his desk carrying the day's trading slips.
Variation margin.
Got it, I think.
We need to open an hours account. We've had a few mistakes, nothing serious, but I need somewhere to put them till I can work them out.
Sure. What number shall I give it?
Well, what's your lucky number?
Eight. Eight is a very lucky Chinese number.
Bonnie grins as she enters back office error count into the computer system. Five blue eights fill the screen. London. A limousine drives past liveried footmen through an ornate gate to the mansion house where the Barings' annual dinner is being held. Sir Peter Baring and his wife enter the banqueting hall.
And now,
smiling broadly, the balding bank chairman rises.
You may be the oldest merchant bank in the world, but that's no excuse for not keeping up with the times. When I became chairman, I realized we couldn't go on running Barings like a gentleman's club. We had to look beyond our traditional recruiting grounds, the old school tie, to seek out a new and hungrier breed. We're beginning to see the fruits of those efforts, and I have to say, the recovery and profitability since the reorganization has been amazing. To be frank, I've discovered it's not actually terribly difficult to make money in the securities business.
On the trading floor in Singapore, Kim receives signals from Nick, who is also busy on the phone at the desk. She signals back uncertainly.
Phil.
Nick confirms the order to Tokyo, but Kim is still signaling worriedly from the floor, and Nick realizes she has traded incorrectly.
Well, you paid 50 for 20.
Nick in a grey suit in Simon's office.
Man. Simon, I've got a slight problem. One of the girls sold 20 contracts for Fuji Bank instead of buying. I can't do anything about it till Monday.
And what's the damage?
Nick looks down, rubs his neck.
20,000 at the close.
Annoyed, Simon glares at him.
Sack the cow. She'll never work on Simex again.
That's a bit hard, isn't it?
Look, you handle it. Have a word with London, but make sure you make that client good.
All right.
Nick walks through a crowded bar to the table where his team of traders and Lisa are relaxing.
Hey, have a beer, should head.
George offers him a bottle of Tiger. He greets Lisa with a kiss. Nick leaves the table and goes to meet the returning Kim. She cannot meet his eyes.
Kim.
Nick, I'm really sorry. I got so confused. Everybody was shouting all at once.
That's the job. That's what it's all about, keeping a cool head.
I'm so sorry. I paid back the money.
Sure, Kim. 4 years' salary. And if the market moves this weekend, it could be even worse.
Her eyes fill with tears and Nick holds her, father-like.
Mistakes. Look, with a bit of luck, I can trade out of it on Monday, all right?
Kim nods distractedly.
Nick, I've been waiting for you while everyone else is having a good time. I'm going home now.
Kim!
She runs from the bar.
Kim!
Nick returns to the table. He sits by Lisa and swigs from the bottle of Tiger.
Everything all right?
Never better.
Why don't you let me come in there? I can't just sit around on my arse all day doing nothing.
It's not a problem, Lisa. I can handle it.
Nick looks away from an exasperated Lisa. Monday morning, the Simex trading floor. Nick phones Tokyo.
Fernando, how are March futures looking? I need to make up 20 contracts at Friday's price.
You won't get Friday's price.
I should have closed off the position first thing Monday and taken the loss. Instead, I waited for the market to change. It changed all right, but not the way I wanted. Now I was stuck with a bigger loss than I could own up to. And it was all my fault.
Nick, I hear your girl handed in her notice.
Yeah, never came back. She couldn't stand the pace.
So much for loyalty. Did you make the client good?
Of course. Made a small profit, actually.
Good man.
Nick leaves Simon and enters the back office with his trading slips. He leans confidentially over Bonnie's desk.
This one's for the 5/8 account. I bought the missing contracts.
£60,000?
Shh.
It was only 20 before.
When the market went the wrong way, I had to cut the loss.
What did Simon Jones say?
Were you serious? He'd shut us down if he knew. Look, everything will be all right so long as we balance the books by the end of the month.
How?
Well, we trade on our own account until we wipe out the losses, and then we can use money from the client account and pay it back with next month's profits.
You mean gamble?
That's all the market is. One giant casino.
George is frantically trading in a scrum of dealers. Nick signals urgently to him.
I was counting on the fact that nobody looked at the books until the end of each month. As long as the 5/8 account showed a nil balance in the last day of the month, no one would suspect that anything was wrong. But instead of winning back the position, we made more losses. And I had to borrow more money from the client account to keep them hidden.
Nick drops the phone and holds his head in his hands as the market goes against him. An enraged George fights with a burly blue blazer dealer who has knocked his trading slips to the floor. They are restrained by the other traders. Nick rushes into the heaving crowd to push George back off the floor. On the bed, Lisa massages Nick's neck muscles.
God, you're so tight, you're stiff as a bloody board.
If you only knew what I had to deal with. All because those bastards won't let me hire proper staff.
I thought it was going so well.
It is, it's going brilliant. Just spend most of my life covering everybody else's arse.
Well, why don't you let me come in and out with the back office? I'm bored being a lady of leisure.
No.
Why not, Nick? It's ridiculous you have to handle the trading floor and the settlements office. You can have a nervous breakdown at this rate.
Because I don't want you interfering, Lisa. I can handle it on my own.
Oh, all right then. Keep your pants on. No, I'm saying you can't.
I'm not going back to being a bloody clerk. I'd rather be a plasterer. My mum always used to say that I could be anything I wanted to be so long as I took my chances and worked like a dog.
Yeah, well, you have, haven't you? You've worked really hard and it's paid off. She'd have been so proud of you, Nick.
Do you really think so?
Yeah. I know I am.
She bends down to kiss him affectionately.
That was the worst part. Lisa thinking I was this brilliant success. If she only knew what a fuck-up I really was. When I wanted the market to go up, it went down. If I wanted it to go down, it went up. It was hard not to take it personally.
A worried Bonnie comes into the trading floor of Cymex and makes her way through the hubbub of traders to the desk where Nick is working.
$10 million.
Bonnie, keep your fucking voice down. Look, there's no need to panic.
There's not enough in the client account to make margin payments, Nick.
Nick's jaw drops as he begins to calculate. In the gymnasium, in boxing vest and shorts, he strikes a punch bag viciously.
I need dollars. I need dollars to cover the initial margin payment. I get dollars from London to cover all the client positions in the futures that I buy. Nothing unusual about that.
He smiles triumphantly. In Raffles Hotel.
As long as I could get London to keep sending out money to finance the client positions, I'd have enough cash to stay on top of the margin payments. It was like robbing Peter to pay Paul. But hopefully, I'd end up making enough money to pay Peter back before he found out. Meanwhile, I had to generate more and more business to justify my cash calls. And for that, I needed customers. The bigger, the better.
A fair-haired, middle-aged man invites him in. Nick, smartly dressed, sits in the luxurious hotel room as the man finishes a telephone call.
Leeson, I'm Pierre Beaumarchais.
Nice to meet you.
I work for the Geneva Bank and Trust based in the Bahamas. I was speaking with Ang Swee Kian, president of Cymex. He's very impressed by the amount of business you've been generating.
There's a lot of opportunities here.
Oh, yes. I do a lot of business on Cymex. With the exception of George Soros, I probably trade in the Nikkei more than anyone. Sometimes over 5,000 contracts in a day.
That is a lot. The whole market only does about 20.
Could Barings handle that amount of business?
Nick smiles as he calculates mentally.
You bet we could. Beaumarchais was the answer to my prayers. I'd be able to siphon off enough commission to square the 8's account once and for all.
At his desk in the exchange, a relaxed Nick takes a phone call.
Hello.
Pierre Beaumarchais.
I want to buy 4,000 June contracts.
I've got a price of 350 on my screen, but this will move it.
Try not to pay more than 400.
With George and Henry.
We've got to get them cheap. Beaumarchais is a big player. If we can pull this off for him, then we get a shitload of business. What's liquidity like?
Tight as the police ass. You'll get away with 500, and then the price will move up.
All right. Well, then we've got to con the other traders into thinking we're sellers. And when the price drops, buy. All right?
Nick turns to his screen as George and Henry go to the trading floor. As they pretend to be urgent sellers, he watches the figures blink yellow and red, decreasing until he looks up and signals to Henry to bring the contracts in. Henry catches his eye and begins to buy. George gets the message and immediately hurls himself among the coloured blazers, waving his hands and signalling frantically. Traders crowd around him in a melee of paper and windmilling arms. Nick watches tensely from the desk. Thumbs up and a broad smile from Nick at the desk. George and Henry hug each other.
Nobody saw us coming. We swooped on the first 1,500 like a stealth bomber. 4,000 contracts.
Balls of steel, fat boy. Balls of fucking steel.
Nick, George and Henry congratulate each other as they leave the Cymex exchange. Nick and Lisa dance romantically in their darkened apartment. The Nicky indicator in Cymex creeps unhesitatingly upwards. Nick and George celebrate drunkenly in a bar.
At last my luck had changed. Suddenly I couldn't stop making money. I was long in the Nicky. That meant I was gambling on it going up. And up it went. Up and up and up.
Nick and Lisa kiss luxuriously in their apartment. Nick, on two phones simultaneously, manipulates the trading in Cymex. Pierre Beaumarchais smiles his approval from the Caribbean. Nick and Lisa roll enthusiastically on their bed. Nick makes his deals rapidly, happily. Lisa surveys expensive jewellery in the Orchard Road designer shops and cycles in the fitness centre.
If it went all the way up to 19,000, I stood to make a killing in all the options I've been selling.
Bonnie and Nick are behind the desk in Cymex, watching the indicator creep upwards towards 19,000. Bonnie's face is twisted by the tension. Nick whirls Bonnie around. A confetti of trading slips showers down. Later, in the back office.
Yeah! It's amazing. You've made back all the losses. Over $10 million.
What did I tell you? Oh, ye of little faith. You keep doubling up, and sooner or later, you're bound to win.
Nick contentedly munches his habitual sweet. In their apartment, Nick and Lisa cook on a barbecue on the balcony. Nick wears a Santa Claus hat and shorts. Lisa is in a light summer dress. While the guests chat and socialise in the living room, Nick drinks from his bottle of beer and takes Lisa aside.
Happy?
Yeah, you?
Never better.
I have been sailing a bit close to the wind. I didn't want to worry you with it.
What do you mean?
No, it's all right. The market turned round and a whole load of my positions came good. I made it all back.
What are you on about, Nick?
Don't get your knickers in a twist, but we made some mistakes and ran up some losses. I had to go out in a bit of a limb to get back the position.
Well, how big were the losses?
It's about $1 million.
£1 million? Oh, for God's sake, Nick.
No, it's all right. Paid off. I squared it up. I had to do it to protect the guys.
Yeah, well, you promise me that you'll never do that again. It's not worth it, Nick.
Promise.
You will give me a heart attack.
A smile slowly emerges on her face.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
They kiss with increasing passion, and their guests in the living room see their embrace becoming closer and closer. Nick gives them the finger. Back on the trading floor of Cymex.
And I really meant it. I was the number one trader in town. And as the new year came in, I was determined to kick my addiction to the ice account once and for all.
What's your opinion of the market, Nick? Long term?
Long term, you kidding? No one thinks long term. I think nanoseconds. Long term's tomorrow morning.
Okay, tomorrow morning then.
That would be telling.
Leeson speaks, the market moves.
You said it, mate.
Nick picks up the phone, puts on his glasses.
Yeah. I want to sell the 220 call options and buy the 200 calls in December. I've got an offer of 0.138 for size. Can you do better?
Nick's face is blank.
I'll get back to you. Quick as you can, Nick. I have to move fast. We should do
that. Nick confers with George and Henry.
What the hell is he on about 0.138 for size? The market in 220 calls is down. He wants to cut his losses.
Yeah, but why 0.138?
It's a ratio. The 200 calls are trading at 1,400. Divide 200 by 1,400, you get 0.143.
All right, but not 0.138. Unless someone's offered him a discount to get the business. Probably Société Générale. We can't let those wankers get him. Pierre's our biggest client.
What are you going to do?
Nick calls Pierre.
I just have to leg it.
You mean buy the contracts from Pierre and sell them when the market rises, is it? I thought we were not supposed to trade for the bank.
Pierre, I can do it. What's the exact size? 6,500. All right, leave it with me. No problem.
What if the market doesn't rise, huh? What if the market falls?
I've gambled and won before. I can gamble and win again. Balls of steel, me old mateys, and you better believe it.
Back in the gym, Nick thrashes out his tension with desperate attacks on the punch bag. In the office, he looks through the yellow trading slips anxiously.
Bonnie, I need you to reopen the ACE account. We really got caned on those Beaumarchais contracts. Now the bastard's dumped us and gone back to Société Générale. You better fax Brenda Granger in London, ask her for more funds to cover the margin payments. Tell her it's for client positions. Hello?
Nick, it's Simon. Can you come to my office? I need to see you right away.
Christ, I'd been rumbled. The only surprise was it had taken so long. What was I going to tell Lisa? She'd bloody murder me.
Come in.
Nick enters Ron's grey cell-like office, closes the door and stands glumly facing him.
Congratulations, Nick. The 93 bonuses are in. You're down for 135 grand.
135? That's fantastic.
Your little operation generated profits in excess of £10 million last year. You're a star.
A modest grin from Nick.
In fact, your figures are so high, they're going to check up on you.
Check up on me?
They're sending Ash Lewis out for the audit.
Nick's jaw drops.
Don't worry. It's purely routine.
Ash Lewis? She's meant to be a right ball breaker, isn't she?
Simon, Ash Lewis and Ron Baker sweep into Cymex. Ash wears a dark grey suit, her hair pinned back.
That's our booth.
Ron, well-built with a beard, smiles.
Filled, by 250.
Hi, Nick.
Ash is poker-faced.
Ron Baker and Ash Lewis. Ron is head of derivatives trading in London.
Which I guess makes me your boss, Nick.
Nice to meet you.
How do you do?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, let's see the action.
Nick leads them towards a crowded trading floor.
So who's doing all the business? We're the biggest, right?
Well, we do a lot of arbitrage, so we do have a high volume. We signal all the orders into George in the pit there in front. This is Henry. And at the end of the day, the girls in the office, they log all the deals onto the computer.
You're the manager of the trading floor and the settlements office, is that right?
Yes, Henry, you got a check in 100. Yes, yes.
That's a little unusual. Whatever happened to checks and balances?
That's something we need to talk about.
I'm going to be here for 3 weeks. This is going to be a thoroughly comprehensive audit. No stone unturned, as they say.
Absolutely. Well, anything I can do to help, any stone needs turning, then you let me know. Are we filled? Good man, Henry. Nice to see you, Simon.
Nick and Lisa sunbathe by the pool.
Dad's seen this flat in Blackheath. It's a really good investment. Needs a bit of work, but him and my granddad can fix it up. Think of it like an insurance policy in case you get sacked. I have to go back to England and work as a plasterer. Oh, what's up with you, Miss Rigas?
Nick turns to her.
What would you do, Lise? What would you do if I did get the elbow?
You've just been given a really great big bonus.
Yeah, but what if it all went wrong? What if I'm not as clever as everyone thinks I am?
Oh, of course you are. Anyway, it's you that I love. I don't give a toss about the money. If it was up to me, we'd jack it all in now, go back to England and start a family.
Strain is etched on Nick's face.
You're doing brilliantly, Nick. You're a bloody star.
Nick flops back onto his sunbed, looks despairingly up into the sunlight as he rubs his forehead. In Baring's offices, Simon intercepts him in the corridor.
Nick. Simon. What's happening? You're looking disgustingly chirpy.
Haven't you heard? Panic over. Ash has been called back to London.
You're kidding. Why?
Office politics. Some turf battle between Baring Futures and Baring Securities.
And what about the audit?
They're sending Mark Taylor and Chris Carr. Compared to Ash, they're a couple of pussies.
Pity. I was rather looking forward to seeing the dreaded Ash Lewis in action.
Nick punches the air in jubilation as he walks off. Outside the building, he calls Lisa on his mobile phone.
No, I'm just leaving now.
All right, well, I'm just going to go and jump in the shower, so if you get in first, you put the oven on.
Yeah, all right, sweetheart. All right. I'll see you then.
Bye, darling.
As Nick walks to the road, a bright red two-seater sports car roars up, driven by George.
Get in, you bastard.
What the fuck is that?
Sex on wheels, love.
It's a Porsche, moron. Get in!
Nick strokes the scarlet paintwork and climbs in.
Tell you what it is. It's disgusting.
I tell you what it is. It's a great big hard-on.
George hurtles around a tight corner. Nick claps enthusiastically and mimes guitar playing. George speeds recklessly down the tightly packed sunlit rows of buildings. In a crowded bar on the quayside of Singapore Harbour, Loy, a journalist, hails Nick and George as they enter. Nick waves and goes over to Loy at the bar. Loy is with a long-haired young man.
Nick, my man, what do you have?
Oh, a beer, please. You know George, sir, one of my dealers.
How do you do? This is Danny Agropoulos, works for Intercontinental Trading. Just been sent out from the
nice
London.
Nice to meet you, Danny.
Yeah, nice to meet you, mate. I've heard a lot about you. I hear Baring's have almost cornered the market over here, basically.
Yeah, well, rumours of my success are greatly exaggerated.
Don't be so modest. Do you know what they're calling him?
What are they calling him?
King of the Exchange.
Yeah.
Simex just gave Baring an award for the amount of business he's generated.
How you doing? All right.
You want a beer?
I'd love a beer.
Nick puts a friendly arm around Danny, steering him to the bar. In their apartment, Lisa is lying on the couch watching a repeat of Dad's Army. She is not amused. A half-eaten dinner is on the coffee table. She looks at her watch. In the quayside bar, the barman is dropping two small glasses full of whiskey into two glass tankards of beer. The beer foams up as the glasses drop in. Nick shows the concoction to Danny. Danny and Nick drink rapidly. The whole bar watches the competition. Beer flows from Nick's chin as he slams the glass down first and they rock backwards. A group of girls peer in through the glass door of the bar. George and Nick and Danny sway drunkenly about at the bar.
If they want to come in, or if they don't want to come in.
Let's give them a hand and moon them. That should help me decide. Thank you, Sean. Your mother wasn't.
I love this man.
On the count of three.
It worked before.
It won't work again. What?
Nick and Danny turn their backs to the entrance and drop their trousers, wiggling their bare backsides at the horrified girls who disappear rapidly. Danny and Nick make their way back to the bar, fastening their belts. More depth charges are lined up for them in the bar. Nick looks at his watch. He fumbles with his mobile phone and looks up to see a policeman and a girl approaching. The girl points to Nick.
Oh, you've got to be joking.
No laughing matter. A
outraging a lady's modesty. Very serious crime in Singapore.
Nick, dumbfounded, looks back to an equally shocked Danny.
News of my disgrace reached London. At the highest level.
Baring's boardroom.
Slightly embarrassing, but one of our traders in Singapore got drunk the other night and pulled a moon.
What did you say?
He exposed his bottom.
Why?
Playing silly bugs, I expect. Unfortunately, the law over there takes rather a dim view.
Maybe we should sack him.
Sacking him would be awkward, to say the least. He generates a significant amount of our profits in the Southeast Asia division.
I ought to mention we're getting rather a lot of stick from the Bank of England about our funding over there. Technically, we're in breach of regulations governing the ratio of lending to capital.
Would you like to have a quiet word in their ear?
We're not quite there yet. When I spoke to Andy Dixon at the bank, he said the matter was buried reasonably deep in his in-tray. Just flagging a concern.
Oh, quite right. It's obviously something we should keep an eye on. Is that it then? Any other business?
Well, what about this chap Leeson? He of the exhibitionist tendencies.
Well, I suppose it's probably something we should leave to the Singapore authorities.
I have to say, I'm inclined to agree.
The blue computer figures of 5/8 fill the screen.
So, it was the prophets that saved me. If they only knew.
In the back office in Singapore.
Nick! That guy from Reuters again. It's the second time he's called today.
Turn him off. Oh, fuck it. Give me the phone. Put me up the bells and the eggs account, will you? Hi, Loy. What's shaking?
Nick! You're a hard man to pin down.
Well, you know how it is. What can I do you for?
That's quite a position you've been buying.
We're happy. I don't know which way the client wants to play it.
Who is this mystery client? You must have rather large balls.
I'm sorry, mate. You know how it is. Client confidentiality and all that.
Is it Pierre Beaumarchais?
Bonnie gives Nick the printout.
Sorry, Loy. Gotta go. I'll speak to you later. Speak to you some other time. Jesus Christ, Bonnie. 7.78 billion yen.
Do you want the dollar amount? But 100 yen to the dollar...
Yeah, yeah, send me $7.8 million. Right, I want you to book me the following notional trade, selling 1,000 December 21,500 put options at a price of 7,778, and then print me a new report after that entry, so it shows 7.78 billion yen as if it was owing to us from Cymex.
Sure, Nick.
And, then fax Brenda Granger in London asking for more funds. Tell her we've had a large margin call on our client positions.
How much?
$1 million. Make it 2.
Worried, Nick rubs his chin as Bonnie notes the details. In the darkened bedroom, Nick and Lisa are asleep.
Nick's phone.
Nick rolls over sleepily and picks up the phone.
Hello?
I'm not disturbing you, am I?
It's 2 a.m.
Oh, Christ, sorry, mate, had no idea. Listen, the point is, the old farts are getting nervous. They want you to unwind the position a little.
That's easier said than done, Ron. Don't want to send the wrong signal to the market.
Yeah, yeah, second thing is, we need another £2 million profit by next month to secure our bonuses.
£2 million? Ron, what planet do you live on, mate?
1 minute you want me to unwind the positions, and the next...
Failure is not an option, mate. We're counting on you. Now, I'll see you at the junket in London in 3 weeks' time.
Ron smiles wryly as he finishes the call.
£2 million. Who do they think I am? George Soros.
Nick and Lisa's plane lands at Heathrow.
We were coming to the end of another year and I was deeper in this shit than ever. Barings wanted me to be one of the speakers at their annual group conference in London. I was their star trader and they all wanted to know the secrets of my success.
Lisa's parents' house.
It didn't bear thinking about.
It's nice, I'm going to Karen. Yeah, that's the best place you could be, actually.
Oh. Lisa and her mother chat in the kitchen. Nick watches TV.
Hello? Nick, it's for you. John Baker?
Lisa's mother takes the phone to Nick. He accepts it wearily, blows out his cheeks and composes himself.
Ron! Can't believe you tracked me down already.
Yeah, listen, with this conference and everything, you're going to be away from the trading floor one hell of a long time.
Well, I had to come back a week early for this funeral. I told you Lisa's granddad passed away.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry about that, mate, but I'm fighting for your bonus here. You need to keep up those profits.
I couldn't miss this funeral.
No one's asking you to. I'm going to issue you with a security pass so you can come in on Sunday and trade through the night. For the time difference, you won't miss a thing. Get out the fucking way!
Nick stares at the phone.
Well, if he's working this hard, he's going to need his food.
He wants me to go into the office on Sunday night and trade.
Well, no! That's completely outboard. Let someone else make the bloody profits for a change.
She's right, Nick. You're not a machine.
It's bonus time. If I don't deliver, then everybody loses out.
Well, it's not fair, Nick. You carry on at this rate, you're going to be in a right old state. It's going to be your funeral next.
For as much as it hath pleased Almighty God, of his great mercy, to take unto himself the soul of our dear brother here departed, we therefore commit his body to the ground. Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Lisa weeps, comforted by a solemn but distracted Nick.
Good to see you, son. Sorry occasion, but there you go.
He had a good innings.
That's the main thing. So how's it going over there?
Can't complain.
We're all proud of you, Nick. What you've achieved.
It's no big deal.
Don't be so bloody modest. You a plasterer's son. I just wish your mum could have been here to see it.
Nick, near tears, takes his father's arm.
So do I. I'll try not to let you all down, Dad.
What did you say?
It's okay, it's jet lag. Don't pay any attention to me.
The lift doors open in Barings London headquarters.
I felt sick going into the office, seeing all the people I'd been avoiding for months. It was one thing to con people over the phone. It was quite another to do it to their face.
Nick? It's you, isn't it? Nick Leeson? I heard you were coming in. You haven't the vaguest idea who I am, have you?
Brenda? Mm-hmm. Of course. I'm sorry. How are you?
So I finally get to put a face to the voice. My God, you are so young.
Well, aging rapidly, I'm afraid.
Look, Nick, why don't you come into my office? I really do need to talk to you about the figures.
Brenda, I have a meeting with Peter Norris in 3 minutes.
Oh, well, do come in right after, okay? Nobody out there can give us answers to our questions but you, and they just asked for another ton of funding.
All right. This one?
Yeah. He heads off to Norris's office.
Brenda was my cash lifeline. She was the last person I wanted asking awkward questions.
I wanted you to meet me.
But first, I had to deal with Peter Norris.
He's such a red-hot trader, I've arranged for him to come in overnight and keep trading the Nikkei.
Are you really?
You can't keep Nick away from the floor. He's the key man in Singapore.
Sounds like you're the key man in Asia.
He's an animal. He's insane. You should see the way he takes that market on.
Are you enjoying yourself, Nick?
Yes, it's all right.
All right?
Norris and Ron exchange glances. Nick laughs modestly.
Now, we need to talk about merging the sales areas in Asia. Nick has some views. If we can replicate his success in Hong Kong and Tokyo...
What do you think, Nick?
It does make a lot of sense to merge. There would need to be controls, of course. But the trade and books can be used in such a way as to supplement the customer's requirements and increase information flows. Synergetically.
Exactly, synergy. So you see, Peter, Nick agrees. And he's been very successful with his customers. They love him.
Yes, excellent. Well, keep up the good work. And Ron, you sort out what you want with this merger. Now, gentlemen, I really have to... Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
They shake hands. Nick and Ron head down the corridor past Brenda's office.
Well, I think that went well, don't you? You seem to go for the merger idea.
Oh, he did, Ron. He really went for it.
Hey, this will be good for you too, Nick. They'll give you some kind of fancy new title.
Nick ignores Brenda's door.
Nick? Nick? Ron?
They disappear around a corner. She gives up. At the Barings conference, Ron is on stage.
Being good is not good enough. Everyone must be connected to our strategy, or we will find you and weed you out.
In the bar, Nick has another Bloody Mary.
Information arbitrage is our business. If you don't know what an information curve is, then find out. Position yourself in an information curve. Dominate the curve. Nick Leeson, who most of you know and all of you have heard of, runs our operation in Singapore, which I want all of you to try to emulate. Now, you hear later from Nick about how he does it, but I just want to drive home to you guys that if you could all think about Nick and perhaps come up with ideas to follow his footsteps, Bearings will become one of the most successful operations in the derivatives business.
Nick vomits in the toilet downstairs. His body heaves convulsively as he rests his cheek on the seat.
Oh, we are going to make so much money. But more to the point, you are going to make so much money.
Ron points to various members of the dark-suited audience. Sir Peter and Norris respond with broad smiles and they lead a standing ovation. Ron holds a lectern with both hands, looking down the aisle of applauding bankers. In their hotel room, Lisa enters with designer label carrier bags. Nick lies prone on the bed in shirt and undershorts.
Nick.
She takes off her coat and goes to the bed.
Wake up.
Lisa.
We're meant to be going to the dinner.
I can't face it. I can't take it anymore. I'm not going back after Christmas. You can't make me.
What are you going on about? You're sitting next to Peter Norris in the seat of honour. Oh, don't tell me you missed your presentation too.
I've been drinking.
No, I never would have guessed. I think it's downright rude. They're expecting you. You can't let everybody down like that.
You don't understand, Lisa. I'm sitting on a fucking volcano. I can't go back.
And what about your bonus? Now, stop babbling and get yourself dressed. I'll give you volcano lit, Lisa. Right,
Lisa.
Bam.
Lisa. Oh. Boy. Lisa.
She bundles him into the shower where he sits as the water streams over him. Nick thrusts her back onto the bed, where his now naked wet body lies on top of her. She holds his face in her hands tenderly and rubs his wet hair as they kiss.
You've got to get dressed.
He keeps his lips pressed to hers. Eventually, he lifts his head and looks at her anxiously.
Promise me you'll always love me, Lisa. Whatever happens, you'll always love me.
Oh, of course I will. You're my man, aren't you?
She strokes his cheek tenderly, and mollified, he kisses her again. In Singapore, a yellow taxicab pulls up outside Bearings.
It was crazy going back. I couldn't hope to survive the end-of-year audit. There was that little matter of the 7.78 billion yen which I'd fabricated to plug the hole in the 5/8 account. I should have told Lisa when I had the chance, but there was this voice that kept telling me I traded out of my losses before, I could trade out of them again.
Simon's office.
What's this letter all about?
Nick peers at it.
Well, it's from Cymex.
Yes, I know it's from Cymex. It came while you were away. It appears that your company has financed the trading positions held by sub-account 88888. If this is the case, you have violated Cymex Rule 822, which prohibits members from financing the trading margins of their customers.
They're just banging on about our intraday funding limits.
Well, what is sub-account 88888 anyway?
It's a customer account. I mean, we have umpteen trading accounts, so I'd have to look into it.
We're the number one trader in town, and they're trying to tie us up in red tape. Anyone would think they didn't want us to trade.
I'll draft an answer for you.
Yeah, do that, will you? Get it on my desk by the morning.
Awesome.
Entering the apartment, Nick closes the door and walks thoughtfully in, looking around. Puzzled, he goes into the bedroom. In the bright, tiled bathroom, Lisa is seated on the lavatory, legs splayed. She clutches her white, blood-spotted sundress to her.
Lisa, what are you doing?
She looks at him tearfully.
I'm bleeding, Nick.
Nick stares in shock. An ambulance races through darkened streets. Inside, Nick comforts Lisa.
Because I've made some shock.
Of course I'm not angry with you, my love.
You want the baby, don't you, Nick?
I really want the baby. I want lots and lots of babies. Right?
A nurse wheels a patient lying on a trolley past Nick, sitting hunched on a chair outside the emergency room. His legs twitch nervously. He looks up. A doctor emerges. Nick rises to meet him.
Your wife is okay. I'm afraid she's lost a baby.
Nick starts to walk away, but helplessly comes back, swallowing hard, fighting back tears. Back in Cymex, in the midst of the trading floor, George and Harry are frantically asking for instructions from an impassive Nick.
That was the turning point. That was when I decided I couldn't stand around any longer, hoping the market would move in my favour. I was going to have to make it move. I didn't care how much money it took. I was going to go for broke.
Ron and Brenda in Baring's London office.
The man is single-handedly generating a fifth of the group's worldwide operating profits.
I know, Ron, but $30 million in margin payments for one day's trading?
No, no, you don't seem to understand. The volumes are enormous. Nick's guy is the biggest player on Cymex.
They go into Brenda's office and call Singapore.
Hello?
Nick, it's Brenda. Listen, buddy. This is putting a terrible strain on our borrowing. Tony Hawes is all over me about your cash calls.
Yeah, I hear you, Brenda. But London is the cash cow for the business here. We just don't have access to any other funds.
From a drawer, Nick takes a sweet.
I mean, frankly, if you keep pestering me like this, I've got a good mind just to stop trading.
No, Nick, it's okay. Listen, just get back to me with some meaningful figures, okay?
Nick hangs up on her and takes the wrapper from his Mars bar. In the lift, he winces as the phone rings.
Hello?
Nick, thank goodness I caught you. Listen, I know Brenda's been giving you a hard time.
I don't think any of you seem to understand how it works out here.
Yeah, you may be right about that, mate. Anyway, consider it sorted, but you are going to have to start reducing these positions.
Well, Ron, I'll see what I can do, all right?
Oh, and while I've got you about your bonus... the budget's tight, and although you've been exceptional, there's not much to go round.
I thought we had a record year.
Yeah, having said all that, I've put in a special plea to Peter, and he's agreed to go up to 350.
350? That's ridiculous.
I'm really pushing out the boat for you, mate. I'm making an exception.
Listen, I'm busting my balls here. I made us the top house in Cymex. We even got that award for the amount of business we're doing.
Yeah, I know that, Nick. Look, I'll see what I can do. I'll see if it can't start with a four, eh?
In their apartment, Lisa sits in bed. Nick brushes his teeth.
It's their opening offer. They would have thought something was wrong if I'd accepted straight away.
Yeah, it's like winning the lottery. Must think the world of you.
Lisa's face contorts as she can't hold back the tears. Nick perches on the bed and hugs her.
What's the matter, Lisa?
Well, what do you think's a bloody matter, Nick? Everything's changed. I just want to go home. I want to get the air out of here and go home.
But you wanted to come back. What about the bonus?
Well, can't you get the bonus in London? Please, Nick, I want to get on with my life. I want to start a family. I'm going stir crazy here on my own.
All right, calm down. Look, I just need a little bit more time to sort things out, turn things around.
No! You're up at dawn and you come back at night, you're collapsed into bed. How am I meant to get pregnant again if we never make love?
I know. But this could set us up for life.
When's bonus day?
24th of February. Just 5 weeks to go.
Well, we can leave on the 25th. I mean it. I'm calling the furniture movers tomorrow.
Right. Nick puts his head to hers. He holds her close.
With everything else closing in on me, I'd forgotten all about the moon in charge. When it finally came to court, I was facing a possible jail sentence.
Danny, Nick and Lisa, very soberly dressed, sit nervously outside the court. Nick and Danny's lawyers emerge.
The charge has been reduced to a misdemeanor. The maximum penalty is a $200 fine. I think we should plead guilty.
The office.
It was uncanny. I'd got away with it again.
To the Singapore legal system, a shining example to the free world. Oh, yeah.
We bared our all for Baring.
A pair of bonds takes on a whole new meaning after this.
Talk about a bear market. Hello, Miners Anonymous.
This is Weiwei from Coopers and Lybrin. Is that Nick?
Speaking.
I'm compiling the end of year audit and there seems to be a big hole in the accounts. I'm missing this 7.78 billion yen receivable from Cymex.
At his desk, Nick is momentarily stunned. He swallows.
Nick, can you hear me?
Is it all right?
It's a little bit complicated. What do you need?
I can't find any paperwork.
It was an over-the-counter trade between Spear Leeds and Kellagg and Baring's London. It fell through the computer system. I'll have a word with the systems manager. I'll get something to you.
I need three bits of paper. One, confirmation from SLK that the 7.78 billion yen will be paid. Two, sight of your bank balance to show it's been received. And three, a note from Ron Baker saying he's aware of the deal and approves it. Well?
It's nothing, just a computer glitch. They're doing their annual audit.
Night falls in the Singapore skyscrapers. Nick sits alone in the office at the keyboard, still wearing his dark suit from the afternoon court appearance. He's typing with one finger. A letter from Speer, Leeds and Kellogg to himself is appearing on the computer screen. It confirms the deal regarding 7.78 billion yen. The letter emerges slowly from the printer. Nick rummages in a filing cabinet. He finds an old Speer, Leeds and Kellogg letter. Occasionally glancing nervously around, he cuts out the letterhead and signature, carefully placing and then pasting them onto the letter he has written. He stands over the photocopier as it produces a copy of the pasted forgery and then prints another letter from Bearings. He heads for the door with the letters.
And so with scissors and paste, I created $78 million out of thin air. This was forgery, pure and simple. And there was no going back.
Nick!
So, Jesus, you almost gave me a heart attack.
What's this missing 7 billion yen?
Oh, that's a nightmare. It's an OTC trade from last month that was incorrectly booked. The auditors are really on my case about it.
It's a pain in the bloody arse, but we've got to get it sorted.
The point is, we're owed the money by SLK.
Who the hell are SLK?
Speer, Leeds and Kellogg. It's a brokerage house.
No, better send me a memo soon as. Get these auditors off my back.
Sure, Simon. Don't worry, I'm onto it.
Nick walks away, relieved. In their housing board flat, Bonnie and her family eat dinner.
I want you to transfer 7.78 billion yen from the client account into the house account for us
tomorrow. But it won't go. There isn't enough money.
Yeah, I know that. But you can reverse it immediately after. It's just an electronic transaction. I want the transfer done. And I want the bank to send us a fax of the statement showing the 7.78 billion yen credit, all right?
Bonnie frowns.
All right, Nick. If you say so.
All right, cheers, Bonnie.
In their apartment.
Tony was looking for you.
Jesus Christ, if I hear any more about this 7 billion yen.
It's about $70 million, isn't it? What do you reckon, red or blue?
What, and you think I just walked off for $70 million?
No, I didn't say that.
It's a computer error.
Well, you need someone to help in the back office. That's what I've been telling you all along. You're not blooming Superman.
Lisa, don't start all that again, will you?
Well, it wouldn't have happened if I'd have been there, I can tell you.
Right. Going out.
Well, where are you going?
To get pissed. And if anyone calls, tell them I've gone to South America.
Well, you can bloody stay there then! What?
Lisa stalks off, slapping the blue dress she's been carrying against her thigh. In the middle of the night, Lisa, in bed alone, stirs. Nick opens the front door and closes it behind him stealthily, opening his briefcase at the fax machine. He gives a furtive glance towards the bedroom before he inserts the letter, supposedly from Speer, Leeds and Kellogg, into the fax. He punches the numbers and pushes the button to send it to Wei Wei at Coopers & Lybrand. In her office, Wei Wei takes out the faxes. She looks at them thoughtfully. On the head of one of the copies, above the Bearings crest, is printed, "From Nick and Lisa." In London, Ron knocks at the door of Peter Norris's office.
Come in.
Ron comes into the plush office. Deferentially, he approaches the desk where Norris is working.
I thought you'd like to know the audit's been cleared. Nick got them the paperwork. Everybody's happy.
Thanks, Ron.
Technically, we're in breach of Cymex regulations, but basically, it was just a non-transaction. With any luck, the auditors won't mention it in the official report, or we could have problems with the local regulator.
Sounds sensible. Do you know, Nick made $10 million doing arbitrage in a week. That's about $500 million a year.
The guy's a turbo arbitrager.
Well, frankly, if he's doing that amount of business for that amount of profit, I don't know why we don't shut down the rest of the bank. We're just overhead.
Yeah.
Ron smiles broadly. In Singapore, Nick is soaking in his bath, eyes closed, his beer and phone poised on the edge.
Hello?
Nick, have you been avoiding me? I've been trying to reach you for days.
Sorry, Tony, it's been chaos here. The audit went through, I thought you knew.
It's this SLK thing.
It's all been cleared up.
I know. What's bothering me is where you got all the money to actually, well, pay SLK in the first place. I mean, it's the equivalent of $78 million. It doesn't add up, you know.
Nick takes a swallow of beer.
It's obvious, Tony. It's part of the funding that we've had from you over the past few weeks.
Yes.
So, the same figure will flow back to you.
I see. You're saying that some of the funding was used to pay SLK?
That's right, Tony. So we'll be able to pay it back to you.
That'll be good. Getting our funding down will be good. I'm having to juggle quite a few balls at the moment.
Yeah, we all are, Tony, believe me. Look, I'm sorry, I've got a dash. I've got company for dinner.
Yes, of course. Well, thanks, Nick. Thanks for clearing that up.
Nick and Lisa lie in bed in the darkness. Nick picks up the telephone.
Yes, Ron, what do you want?
It's me, your wanker, Danny.
Bubble? What are you doing calling me in the middle of the night?
Are you anywhere near a TV?
I suggest you tune in to CNN.
Nick fumbles for the remote, puts on the TV. A male newscaster speaks solemnly in between pictures of damaged buildings.
Jesus, I'm not quite that's what we
think. This is going to kill the market, man. And Nick A's going to fall through the fucking floor.
The TV screen shows stunned Japanese wandering amidst concrete ruins. A woman with her hand covering her grief-stricken face. Nick mirrors her action. The trading floor of Cymex is a heaving mob of coloured blazers, with traders desperately selling and scurrying to and from their desks for instructions. Nick surveys it all with nonchalance, chewing a sweet ostentatiously, casually leaning on the computer screen and watching George and Henry beavering away in the pit. Danny approaches him.
Mark, he's down 300 points. You stand there cool as a fucking cucumber.
Why I see it, Bubble. It's an opportunity. I'm going to buy into the market. You watch. Buy it all the way back up to 19,000.
Nick gives a clenched fist signal to Henry and George.
Fucking true what they say about your gonads, mate.
See what I mean?
Nick points to the rising Nikkei numbers.
I'll get Fernando a bill in Tokyo. See what's shaking. No pun intended.
Fernando, it's Nick. What's the situation in Kobe?
We've been trying to contact our friends, but the lines are down. Hold it a sec, Nick. We got movement.
Holy shit, selling. There's some selling.
Fucking hell, it's a freefall. I've never seen it move so fast.
He stares at the screen as Danny rushes off.
350! 350!
Nick is totaling up the trading slips in the back office, one hand on the calculator, the other holding his head. Bonnie watches him. Nick smiles weakly and goes back to his calculations. He puts aside the last slip and punches the total key. The figure of 50 million leaps at him from the calculator display, and he stares at it, transfixed. He walks slowly to the men's lavatory, where he pushes open all the black cubicle doors. Leaning over the wash basin, he puts his sweating face right up to the large mirror.
Nicholas Leeson, have lost
£50 million in one day!
A London gym. Tony runs on a treadmill. Ron pushes weights.
What does he do exactly? That's what no one seems able to explain.
It's simple, Tony. He switches contracts between Osaka and Cymex. He's spoiling price differentials between the two markets. That's how he offers the best deals to our customers.
But is that easy? Why isn't everybody doing it?
Because he's absolutely in the center, in the vortex of the information curve over there. He's discovered a whole new way of making money.
Well, he's giving us horrendous funding problems, that's all I know. He doesn't do things by the book, Ron. He just doesn't respect the rules. Is he really the kind of person we should be employing at Barings?
Oh, fuck the rules, Tony. It's Barrow boys like Nick who are turning the city of London around. You can't run a modern financial centre with a bunch of hooray Henrys.
Tony nearly falls off the treadmill. In Cymex, Danny disturbs Nick at his desk.
Bastard. Wakey, wakey.
What's the action, mate?
You tell me. Market's up and down like a tart's knickers.
I think the worst of it's over.
Well, who knows? You could be right.
Well, that's my hunch, anyway.
Listen, I was out last night with that Roy, you know, that journo from Reuters. Now, he's convinced there's no mystery customer. He reckons it's you. He thinks you're trading on your own account, without the bank's approval.
A weak smile from Nick.
Nah, you're not that crazy, are you?
Do you think?
Well, you then? Louis Marché? I thought you were giving you the elbow.
I can't tell you.
Come on, it's me, Danny boy.
I could tell you, but I'd have to shoot you afterwards.
Nick turns and goes, hiding his anxiety.
I know one thing, if customer X didn't exist, you'd have to invent him.
Nick phones Brenda and Ron.
$45 million, Nick, you've already had 100 this week.
Everybody's had an advance margin call from Cymex on their client positions.
They're worried about market stability with these big movements.
It's an emergency measure?
Right.
Isn't everybody squealing out there?
No, we get it back when the market calms down.
Nick leans back casually.
Nick, for the umpteenth time, when are you going to reduce these positions? The bean counters are freaking out.
Ron, didn't know you were there.
For fuck's sake, we've had the Bank of International Settlements in Bale asking if Barings can meet its margin payments. It is not good for the image.
I hear you, Ron. It's a tight market.
Yeah, well, you've really got to try. Take a hit on it if you have to. I know Norris is going to want to discuss it with you when he's out there next week.
Nick sits up.
Norris? I didn't know he was coming.
Yeah, with Tony Hawes. They want to check on these numbers, iron out these funding problems once and for all.
Evening. In a rainstorm, Nick's car goes through the ornate gates of the Singapore Polo Club.
There was no way I could reduce my positions without the market collapsing. By the time they got to Singapore, I was in deeper than ever, faxing Brenda on a daily basis, $30-40 million at a time. They were going to kill me.
Nick, in formal suit and dark tie, walks up the drive past parked limousines. He sways feverishly as he passes a gleaming silver Rolls Royce. He grabs his stomach and, kneeling, vomits in front of its radiator. He lifts his head and sees his pale face and the polished chrome. Getting to his feet, he wipes his mouth and continues towards the footman waiting at the portico.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
He ascends the steps slowly. Tony, Norris and Simon are drinking at the bar in the white colonial mansion.
Nick.
There you are.
I'm sorry I'm a little bit late. Hello.
That's it.
Hey. All right.
What do you have?
A beer would be great, thanks.
Another tiger, please. Nick.
Norris takes him confidentially aside.
How was the market today?
I was staying between 18 and 18.3, drifting a little bit. Seems to have settled after the earthquake.
And the positions you're running, you're happy with them?
I'm relaxed. They're mainly March contracts, so I'll just let them expire.
Good.
Thanks.
Now, we've had a lot of stick over funding. Brenda Granger tells me we're borrowing all over Japan to get the funds to you. People are beginning to talk.
I understand. I understand completely.
Yes.
They rejoin the others.
And that was it.
No, six. And
that was apparently all he had to say on the subject of my enormous exposure that was causing so many ulcers throughout the Barings Empire.
Nine bankers eat dinner at a circular table on the lamplit veranda.
No, thanks, I'm not very hungry. I should have been able to relax after that. I couldn't stop thinking about the losses in the 5/8 account.
Nick glances around the table at each of the bankers who eat enthusiastically.
You're down for 450. Your bonus? Only a week to go.
Nick realizes Tony is speaking to him.
Sorry? Have you thought about what you're going to do with it? Only a week to go.
Nick taps his glass with a knife, stands up and addresses the whole table.
Excuse me, I have an announcement to make.
Relaxed, he stands, hands on hips.
I know that some of you are worried about our exposure in the market, and you're probably wondering about the identity of our mystery customer X. Well, the fact is, he doesn't exist. We're the customer, Barings. And if you look properly at the 5/8 account, which is not a client account at all, it's an errors account, you'll realise that it's concealing losses in the region of £200 million. No, I tell a lie. It's more like 230 after today.
Nick smiles as Norris is sick onto his plate, followed by Simon into the wine cooler. Tony's voice brings Nick back to reality.
Only a week to go.
What are you going to do with all that money?
The whole table of bankers focuses on Nick, who sits impassively.
Well, I'm not going to spend it on futures and options.
Calmly, Nick drinks a glass of water as they enjoy the joke.
I was living from day to day, hoping for a miracle. I wasn't running a position anymore. The position was running me.
Nick and Danny in the Cymex building coffee bar.
State you're in, you've got the bloody shakes. We've been on the res all night.
I'm just getting killed by the market.
Well, tell me about it. I've had a shitty week too.
Nick opens a chocolate egg.
Penguin?
You lucky sod. Do you know how rare they are? Do you know?
Nick laughs hysterically at the absurdity.
Well, ain't that bloody funny?
Lucky Lucy. You have it, I'm not laughing at you, Bubble.
Nick's laughter turns to sobs.
Fuck. Sorry.
Yeah. You really are in a bad way, ain't you? What's the matter?
Nick controls himself.
I have an unauthorized position.
Fucking hell. How big?
Big enough to be a problem.
Poor bastard. I can't say it comes as a complete surprise. Does Lisa know?
No, she'd kill me. Poor thing, she's got enough on her plate at the moment. She's just waiting for bonus day so we can go home.
So what are you going to do?
Nick can't meet his eyes.
Well, I just have to keep buying futures like they're going out of style to support the market. I mean, if it sticks around 18,000, then my options are still in the money and I could get the position back. I may even come out ahead.
Nick, you listen to me now, right? Listen to me. You don't fight the market, man. Even if you can make the margin calls, what happens when the contracts expire? Eh? The way the market's going at the moment, your losses could be catastrophic.
Nick, sweating, stares back at him. In the Cymex exchange, Nick watches the frantic dealing. He compulsively eats chocolates as the Nikkei drops downwards, 18,000, 17,000, 980. He jumps precipitously into the pit, buying and buying, waving his arms in the middle of the throng. George understands, and Nick strides back towards his desk amidst the scurrying traders. He sits down and watches the Nikkei figures. The figures regain 18,000, 18,020. Relieved, he sits at his desk and pours a liter bottle of mineral water over his head. It soaks his shirt and blazer as he slumps, exhausted, at his desk. Tony appears.
Nick?
Tony.
Nick, I really need to go over some of the figures with you.
Sure, Tony.
Nick sees the numbers on the Nikkei indicator falling again.
I'll be back in a minute.
He leaves the desk and rushes into the pit, trading desperately. He is buying against the market, and the traders surround him so that he can only turn to shrug his shoulders at Tony. Tony makes a helpless gesture, mimes a phone call and leaves, as Nick smiles confidently at him. As soon as Tony goes, Nick ceases trading and steps back from the traders to stare, transfixed, shocked to immobility by the figures on the Nikkei. At the end of trading, the exchange is dark, lit only by the light from the traders' screens. Nick is slumped at his desk in an exhausted sleep. He wakes up, rubs his eyes and stares at the final figure on the Nikkei. 17,605. He gets up stiffly.
I'd thrown away countless more millions and it hadn't made a dent. I was only one day from bonus day. But the game was up. I was beaten.
He stops at the door and takes a last look at the littered floor, the ghostly screens, the date indicator showing February 23rd, 1995. He pushes through the doors. In their apartment, Lisa crams clothes into a large red suitcase. She drags it and other cases towards the front door. She takes a final look around, holding their airline tickets in her hand. At the entrance to the apartments, Nick pulls up in a black car, gets out and helps her to load the cases into the boot. They get in and drive off.
Shops on the next left. I want to go and get our deposit back.
Alright. We're going to need it, darling.
He pulls into the side of the road. She gets out of the car and runs into the video shop. Nick waits, chewing his fingernails.
Hello?
For Christ's sake, Nick, the positions have got bigger. If they are reduced, I'm coming out there personally to sort you out.
You're very faint, Ron.
And what's this rumour I'm hearing? There's a rumour that we're the customer.
I'm sorry, Ron, you're going to have to speak up.
Tell me we're not the customer, Nick.
I'm losing you, Ron.
Nick, are you there?
Goodbye, Ron.
Nick presses the off button. Lisa gets back into the car.
You won't give me the full 200, but I stood my ground. I got 180.
Good girl.
Nick throws the mobile phone out of the window and releases the handbrake.
Nick?
The phone lies beeping in the gutter as he drives off. The car heads through the traffic on the multi-lane East Coast Parkway and enters the boundaries of Changi Airport. In London, Sir Peter Baring is seated at the top of a candlelit dining table under a massive painting. He chats to his neighbouring diners. A butler approaches across the rich carpet and whispers discreetly in his ear. He nods and smiles his excuses to his guests and looks down the table at his startled wife. In the privacy of his study, he picks up the handset.
Peter?
I'm sorry to drag you away from your dinner party.
I'm afraid I've got some rather bad news.
By a pool in Borneo.
By the time the shit hit the proverbial fan in London, we'd escaped from Singapore to ponder the future and consider my options. If I had any.
What's going to happen, Nick?
Well, they must have got my facts and closed down all the positions on Friday. The market seems to be holding up okay.
But you're definitely out of a job.
He strokes her chin tenderly.
It could have been a lot worse, but I've still lost them a ton of money.
Nick half rises on his sunbed.
Oh, I'm starving. Do you think they do burgers here?
No, you're not having a burger. That tummy bill's driving me nuts.
Don't stress me, wench. I'll work it off in the gym.
Nick leans across and kisses her.
Better still.
Lisa bridges the gap between the beds to lie on him. He strokes her tanned back. An older couple watch disapprovingly.
Still watching.
On a sunbather's newspaper, Nick's picture is beneath. Gambler who broke bank, hunt for rogue trader.
Jesus Christ, Lisa. Barron's has gone bust.
What?
They watch TV in the hotel room.
The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Kenneth Clark, is trying to calm fears sparked by the failure of Barron's Bank. In a statement to Parliament, he denied reports that the British banking system is about to collapse. According to him, Barron's failure is a unique situation, which he blames on the actions of a rogue trader in Singapore. Estimates of potential losses range from 800 million to over 1 billion pounds. There's no way of knowing how markets will react when they reopen on Monday. And while the Bank of England tries to put together a rescue package, with the Sultan of Brunei rumored as a possible buyer, time may be running out for one of Britain's most venerable financial institutions. Charles Sampson, CNN, London.
Head in hands, Nick collapses on the bed. Lisa stares at the screen. Evening falls over the Malay village as Nick and Lisa hold each other in their darkened bedroom.
How could you not tell me? How could you have kept it hidden for all this time, Nick?
She cradles his head and kisses him.
God, you must have been through hell.
You would have marched me straight into Simon Jones's office.
Yeah, too bloody right I would.
And then I would have got fired. And I would never have had a chance to make the money back. That's what I was going to do.
No, you were gambling. That's what you were doing with other people's money.
I didn't want to let everyone down. You, your dad, the girls in the office. Even Ron Bloody Baker. Do you think they're all going to hate me now?
No, I don't think you're going to be Mr. Popular.
He raises his head from her chest and looks into her eyes.
It could easily have been the other way, you know. It so nearly was. Then I'd be a hero.
Lisa caresses his cheek.
Come here. Come here.
She cradles his head and they hug even more closely.
I still love you. Hmm? I love you very much.
I love you too.
Should we see if we can do something about that belly?
London, Baring's boardroom, Sir Peter on the phone.
Yes, I understand. No, of course. Well, thank you again for your efforts. Goodbye.
He drums his fingers on the table. The board wait anxiously.
That was the Sultan of Brunei's office. They've decided not to proceed. They believe the risks are too great and the time too short in view of the need to have a rescue package in place by the time the markets open again in the Far East.
Is there really no one else?
Right, everyone. It's hopeless.
I therefore have to inform you that Barings is insolvent and will go into immediate liquidation.
Norris weeps and Sir Peter puts a hand on his shoulder. The board members are stunned. In Singapore, Danny on the phone.
Peter Barings has gone on TV and said there's been a conspiracy. They've lost 800 million quid.
My losses were nowhere near that. It was more like 300.
Hello, but Barings didn't do anything Friday, did they? So that now the word's out and the market's crashed.
Bloody idiots.
Listen, they think you've done a runner on your yacht.
What?
Oh, no. But listen, mate, you've got no friends here now, so just get the fuck out of Asia. Get back to London, Australia, anyway. Just get the fuck out.
Yeah, we're trying.
Well, yeah, Nick, get yourself a good lawyer. Be lucky.
Cheers, mate.
Nick replaces the handset of a public phone in the Kinabalu airport. He glances across at a newsstand where his photograph seems to leap from the front page of every newspaper. He strides quickly to meet Lisa pushing the baggage trolley.
It's crazy, there's a manhunt all over Asia. I think we're sailing around Indonesia in our yacht.
What bloody yacht?
I know, it's crazy. What about the flights?
Well, there's one to London that goes via Singapore.
That's not good.
Well, there's a flight to Frankfurt that goes via Abu Dhabi.
Let's take it. Where is it? Pay cash.
They turn away from a policeman and hurry towards the check-in. They both wear jeans and a light shirt. At passport control, the immigration officer hands back passports. Lisa, next in line, approaches the desk. Behind her, Nick keeps his head down nervously. Lisa's passport is returned to her, and Nick comes up to the desk. He faces the gaze of the official, although the tension makes him twitch. She finally stamps the red triangular exit visa on his passport and returns it to him. he takes it and proceeds to the departure lounge. On the plane, Nick wears a reverse baseball cap as he walks down the aisle and heads for his seat by the window. Lisa sits down beside him. Nick turns his cap around to shade his face.
Nick, take that thing off.
This guy up there looking at me.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised that bloody hat on. We talk about conspicuous, you're sticking out like a sore bloody thumb.
Did you say we stop at Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
So that's where they cut your hands off.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. They just stone you.
What?
I'm sorry, but you've got...
We're our bearings, eh? That's what you get behind the wrong sort of person.
Nick and Lisa rock with laughter in their seats. The sun glints on the plane's silver fuselage as it takes off for Frankfurt. In the darkened cabin, Lisa's head on his shoulder, an overhead light shines on Nick as he reads.
That was when it hit me. The enormity of what I'd done. Whatever happened, I knew things were never going to be the same again. And I never felt lonelier in all my life.
A grey morning in Frankfurt, as two police cars, lights flashing, rush across the runway to meet the plane. Inside the cabin, flight attendants walk the aisles.
Whatever happens, I love you.
I love you too.
I've got to get back to London. I couldn't stand it if I was in jail in Singapore. I couldn't stand it if I couldn't see you.
They grip each other's hands tightly. Police cars pull up outside.
Jesus Christ, it's the police. They must know I'm on the flight.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Due to the early arrival of the flight, passport control will take place as you leave the plane. Please have your documents ready.
See?
Six burly policemen march towards the plane.
I'm scared, Lisa.
Nick looks nervously around. Lisa's face betrays her tenseness. The passengers file towards the immigration official at the plane's doorway. Lisa is in front of Nick.
Hospital. Danke. Thank you. Danke. Please show your passport.
Lisa hands over her passport.
Where is your man?
Nick pushes past her to face him.
Nick
is led through steel doors, wearing his baseball cap back to front. He faces the frenzied press mob. Cameras flash and tape recorders are thrust at him. Nick smiles slowly as he imagines a picture of Danny, George, Henry and the other traders bidding at him in Cymex. Delighted, he makes the traders' hand signals with a barrow boy's self-confidence.
250, bid on 100, 250, bid on 100, come on! Who wants some of that? 250, bid on 100, 250, bid on 100, come on!
In the opera house, Sir Peter and his wife, perched in gilded box seats, are enjoying the magic flute.
And that's it, more or less. That's the end of my story. Behrens was eventually sold to the Dutch bank ING for the princely sum of £1. Lisa's got a new life working as a flight attendant for Virgin Atlantic. Oh yeah, she's got herself a new fella. As for me, I fought unsuccessfully against extradition from Frankfurt to Singapore on charges of fraud, forgery and breach of trust. I was sentenced to 6.5 years in prison. Despite rumours of secret bank accounts and hidden millions, I did not profit personally from my unlawful trading. To be absolutely honest, sometimes I wish I had.
Nick stares out from the bars of a cell in the white barracks of Changi Jail. In white letters on a black screen, Nick Gleason was diagnosed with cancer whilst in Changi Jail. He is due for release after serving 4.5 years of his sentence. Lisa divorced Nick and married the new man in her life. He works for an investment bank in the City of London. This audio description was commissioned by Pathé and Granada Films. The script was written by Bob Robinson and narrated by Elaine C. Smith at Murrican & Murrican, Glasgow. Produced by Carol McGregor for Aida Limited, Rogue Trader was written and directed by James Dearden. Produced by James Dearden, Paul Raphael, Jeanette Day. Executive producers, Sir David Frost, Pippa Cross, Claire Chapman. Co-executive producers, William Tyrer and Chris Ball.